stink face.
Well, welcome to part two of this episode of The Story Never Ends, where we're discussing the film adaptation of Harry Potter and the Prison of Azkaban. We were previously discussing, you know, our likes, and we pretty much just cut the episode there, but we're continuing on with the discussion, so we hope you enjoy the rest of it. So, Tinashe, my co-host, tell me your dislikes for The Prison of Azkaban, if you have any.
Yeah, just a few, honestly. It's a nitpick, but why was Harry's room looking less cluttered? Like, I liked his room in Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah.
Like, which I thought was true to the book version of the room, because this wasn't his room. It was Dudley's old room where he put toys and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It was looking hella... It's a nitpick.
So you thought it was too lived in?
No. It looked less cluttered than it should be.
Okay.
We should have had a lot of things cluttered. It should have been picked.
Like in the book, they describe. That's true.
But I'll move on from that. What a dislike was... Why do they have the Slytherin and Gryffindor table next to each other?
Mm.
It's not like that in the books.
Yeah.
That was weird.
Isn't it like sort of like Ravenclaw or something, then Gryffindor, then Hufflepuff something, then Slytherin or something?
The first and second film actually had it right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Slytherins were further down. And I think Gryffindor is in the middle, kind of. And then Ravenclaw is somewhere in between. Mm-hmm. Gryffindor and Slytherin, I think. Hufflepuff is on the other side of Gryffindor.
I think they change it according to the film, because even in the fourth one, they're not always sitting... I think they change it still in the fourth one. Like, but you're right, there's some change that happens in the third that's not in the continuing films.
Yeah. Imagine if they were sitting that close to each other. The fights that would ensue.
Literally. Like, which is why I always keep saying that JK's lost out on an opportunity to not only make Slytherins bad, because now we only ever think of Slytherins as being bad, but they're not technically all bad. But anyway, you're right. Any other
the lack of build up to Snape teaching Lupin's class, as in showcasing the tension and animosity that's
he had a lot of that.
There's a part where when they're in Hogsmeade for the first trip, and when Draco comes upon the crew and he sees Harry's head floating, and then he quickly runs to Snape. Snape calls in Harry, and they're all fearful that he's going to be expelled. Yep. And then Lupin comes in and Lupin saves Harry. That just adds to the animosity and the hatred, all the snide comments, the hidden... subtle,
they're always digging at each other,
digs at each other, kind of thing. That by the time he gets to that class, he is pissed. he tries to out. I'm actually surprised, even in the book, that he just didn't come out and say it.
Yes. He was building up to saying it. Yeah. He was definitely building up saying. I was distracted because I was looking through the book. One of my big dislikes is how they change. This will also go a bit into the character assassination part of mine, but I suppose...
I feel like I know what you're about to say.
Ron and his line about Hermione being a know-it-all and agreeing with Snape.
Yes.
Now, in the book, Ron gets a detention for defending Hermione because even he knows Hermione's a freaking know-it-all, but he's not going to say it to Snape. He's not going to affirm... what Snape says, you know.
I think the other thing that they missed there was that there was already tension between the group.
Yes,
Harry and Ron versus Hermione, then Ron versus Hermione because of Crookshanks and so there was already tension there, which also culminated into that class. Yes, he was angry at Hermione, but there's no way he would let Snape belittle and humiliate her.
Thank you for saying. You actually framed perfectly, because it just shows their friendship was still more important than him getting one on Hermione, which is what he was doing in the book, which is the freaking director, in this sense, Alfonso, unfortunately lost out on that opportunity. That's one less tick for him in my book. But then also, like we were saying before, sometimes Alfonso's desire for aesthetics compromised just general rules within the Harry Potter world. We already said the Lumos rules. I'm sure you're going to... Yeah. Are you going to touch on this now?
I'm going to touch on the surprises.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so just generally... Yeah, or like the aesthetics are great, but tone it down with some of the extra fanciness, because then it breaks the... Like, that's one thing I always love... I mean, hate about directors.
Sacrifice the storyline what's beautiful. Yes.
Yes, and we get it. You're a great director, but just, you know, keep it in line. And then also... Actually, I said this before. We see the stag before the time travel, but would have loved to see it after Harry Potter performs the spell. That is actually a dislike for me. I said it before with the fact that I wanted to see it coming towards him and him touching it and stuff. Mm. Just more as a visual cue. I just thought I didn't like that as much because I just thought... Yeah, it was just the scene kind of just ended rather than like ending on a more like, I don't know, I guess emotional note that I expected. Yeah. But anyway, it wasn't a bad scene, but yeah, I just didn't like that for some reason. But I think that's pretty much all my dislikes, really. It's a pretty great movie to hate, to be honest.
The Crookshanks element of it all. Because it really, you could see how pets were... Not that they called them familiars in the...
Yeah.
Because I touched on this in the book version of this recording. But just that they're intelligent creatures.
Yes.
Meant to not just provide comfort to the witch or wizard, but to help them as well. Mm-hmm. I suppose they are familiars. I don't know why she never decided to call them familiars, J.K. Rowling. To be honest with you,
I wouldn't have preferred familiars.
Yeah.
Either way, I would have been like, no, I would have been reading it like family the whole time. Because already the word familiar is like, I always struggle with that word. Anyway.
But the Crookshanks element of it all, like him going after Scabbers and then him and the Grim and like, just added to the tension that was happening with Hermione and Ron.
Yeah, but they don't show that in the movie at all. Yeah.
And then another dislike. Hey, I don't know where Hermione is working out. I don't know what gym she's going to or if it's a magical gym, what kind of strength she has in arm, but there is no way that she's being thrown about by the Wumpy Willow, and then she's able to grab Harry and slot him into the freaking hole to get to the freaking shack. Like, how does that happen?
Thank you very much. I actually was like looking at that scene again, and I was like, something doesn't make sense here. Like, the way they're being whooped around with the Wumpy Willow. Yeah, you're right. It just didn't make
sense. If she at least attempted maybe to get her wand out and sort of like try and levitate him or shoot him, I would have been like, maybe that's a Hermione thing to do. Yeah. But she probably wouldn't do it because of how dangerous it is.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's not how even it happened in the book. In the book, again, the Crookshanks element of it all.
Mm.
Crookshanks actually... there's a knot under the willow tree or by the willow tree. You press it and then it kind of freezes the tree for a while.
Yeah.
And that's how it allows people to go through it. Yeah.
I think once again, that was an aesthetic thing. Like, as in they were wanting to have a comedy scene. So they took advantage. They had a comedy scene. And instead it didn't end up making sense. Because like you're saying, Hermione would not have been able to do any of that stuff. Like, pick up Harry, throw him in. Like, it's just a bit too much. Any more for you?
No, that's it.
Okay, cool. So now I guess we get into the surprises or the odds and ends of our segment. What did you have first that you can? Because you seem to have a couple more things.
Oh, okay. So I'm gonna talk about the magic in Harry Potter world. So even though it was weird choice for the director to make due to the Ministry of Magic rules about underage magic and considering the events of Chamber of Secrets. Mm. So when wizarding kids are born, they have what they call a trace put on them.
Yes.
And so this trace charm allows the ministry to know when magic is cast in the vicinity of wizards and witches and witches who are under 17 years of age.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And when any magical activity is performed in the vicinity of underage individual, the improper use of magic offers within the Ministry of Magic sends a letter. The trace is automatically broken on the wizard or witch's 17th birthday, which is what happened in Book 7.
Yeah.
That's why Harry and Ron and Hermione had turned 17 already.
Yeah, 17 already. Yeah.
And Harry couldn't perform magic until he turned 17.
Yeah.
So that he wouldn't get caught up by Voldemort.
Yes.
So in the case of... the ministry apparently cannot identify who did the magic, just that the magic happened around the underage wizard. So the trace is not on the wizard, sorry. I think the trace is in the house or something. I'm not sure what the trace is. So the ministry can only detect that magic has happened around an underage wizard. In case of Muggle Bones, there are no possible other people, sources around. And in those cases, wizards born into the household... assume that it was the wizard and then in a wizarding household, the ministry trusts parents to make sure that there is no underage magic going on. Since it was done at the Dursleys, the ministry assumed that Harry had performed the magic, since there was no other wizard in the place, and they had no idea that about Dobby. So, because that was what I said, I thought that because Dobby's magic is different, they could not detect that.
Yeah.
But apparently, they can detect...
Or elf magic as well. Or you mean, just magic in general.
What the ministry cannot detect is elf apparition, because it is unique to elves and it is not the same as a wizard.
Yeah, that's what allows them to get through like certain... like Hogwarts shields and stuff. I think they can operate into Hogwarts and stuff like that.
And then the other issue I had with magic in here was their use of wandless or non-verbal magic.
Yes.
So there's a scene...
Leaky Cauldron.
In Leaky Cauldron, where the wizard is... apparently that wizard is famous or something
in the wizarding world.
I did look it up, but I can't remember his name. Anyway... using...
by wizard, she means actor, by the way. He's not an actual wizard.
No. The wizard. Oh. Yeah, the wizard. That's
written. No, I'm saying, but when you say that wizard is famous, I just was wanting to like laugh at the fact that someone out there will be listening going, oh, he's a wizard. No. He's an actor playing a wizard in the film. Yeah. Sorry, I just thought of like,
the wizard who's...
doing the thing.
Yeah. And then there's a wizard who's cleaning up as well.
They were all cool scenes, by the way. Very cool scenes.
I did say I liked how... aesthetically pleasing this film was, but you know, there are these kind of scenes that don't explain, that don't take into account how difficult non-verbal and wandless magic is.
Oh my god,
I feel like Dumbledore could have done that Arresto Momentum non-verbally, but I think it was more impressive for him to say it out loud.
I mean, look at how Snape had to do the charm in the first book to counter charm what Quirrell was doing as well.
Yes.
Non-verbally. That was a non-verbal spell. Yeah, they were doing like incantations.
Yes.
But then Hermione to stop them had to actually physically go and, you know, stop that. She couldn't do wandless magic because not very easy.
Well, her age, her expertise in magic, some of these things you actually have to learn. And some people have the aptitude for them.
Yes.
Some people don't.
Exactly.
And then there's some magic that you can do wandlessly, but because... the wand allows the person to control the magic.
Yes. Yeah. Which is why Voldemort or Dumbledore could get to that level, because they just have more aptitude for that.
Exactly. And so those were my issues with the how they interpreted
magic. Yeah, just like the surprising way of...
the rules of magic. Because what... we've got so many books on... so many fiction on magic.
Yes.
On time travel, on... magical creatures and all that stuff, like, you know, but there are rules that govern
those worlds. Yes.
And sometimes when you go outside of those rules, it kind of confuses
everything. Yeah, which is why Crimes of Grindelwald is a bloody crime. I'm sorry to say this. That literally, like...
she'll continue saying that until...
I don't know what JK I was thinking. But anyway, we're not here to talk about that. I was actually going to say one of my, I guess, not surprise, but just an odd end there is... the shrinking heads, right? Did you have any thoughts on those? Because the shrinking heads being the ones in the night bus, yes, and they're also featured in the Three Broomsticks. The issue that I've seen people talk about, mind you, we're black people, so for us, some of these offensive things don't end up being offensive if you think about the grand scheme of racism, yes, out there.
Yeah.
But people take issue with the fact that obviously they're Jamaican portrayed, or I guess Caribbean type influence, yep, in the shrinking heads. You know, they've got dreadlocks and they're speaking in like patois type English or whatever.
It's patois, not patois.
I don't know, whichever way. But
I said patois.
I
you
don't
know, Tom Hanks. Son,
oh, yeah, yeah,
man.
Literally, that's how they're speaking.
Yes,
we won't know how to pronounce the word, but either way, we're gonna run with whichever pronunciation. But that, like, do you have any thoughts on that? Like,
I actually had not. I remember watching this film then and then now, and it wasn't until you even pointed it out that it some people consider it racist.
Yeah, exactly.
Honestly, I will not speak to what other people consider racist because I'm not gonna define it for them. As black people, we've experienced racism on many scales, some subtle, the micro aggression, the micro stuff that happened that you, when you try to explain it, it sounds like you're making a big deal out of nothing. Yeah. So to that, I'll just say, to me, I didn't find it offensive. I actually found it funny.
Yeah, exactly.
Just a general apology to people who did not find it funny and found it offensive. It's their culture. It's their portrayal of something that, you know, I'm just saying that, if they found it offensive, and that's to them.
Yep, that's true.
Yeah, I'm not going to be
Most of the people that I said found it offensive really were just like white podcasters.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I haven't come across like a black person. Sorry. So when you started saying, oh, their culture. No. These were like white people, saying this. So I was still like, I don't know. I didn't really find any issue. There are things that in Harry Potter, like Dean Thomas.
Exactly. That I found an issue with. Cho Chang.
Exactly.
That I found an issue with.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
The fact that
Lavender Brown was recast.
The fact that you can count the POC, the people of color cast in this films, mm-hmm, like you can count them on one hand, people who are actually significant to the storyline.
Of which there are really none, because
Kingsley Shacklebolt is at the very least.
Literally, the ministry has fallen. They have taken over. That's literally his significance. Like, what the heck? What else? But, I hate this. Two things. Tom the bartender was changed into a handbag.
Oh, yes.
Do you know why?
Yeah.
But I'm going to actually cue, when we were saying you were going to cue things, Seamus Finnegan, when the Grimm scene, the Grimm, what's the Grimm? The Grimm.
I read that somewhere. Did he say the green or something?
Yep. Okay. Let me just show you. He said the green. Let me just show you. Let me just cue the... I forgot to cue this before. Let's just play the scene again. Unfortunately...
I'm glad you're playing from your account because you have...
Oh, no, I canceled that ages ago.
Did you?
Ads, so all the way.
How are you not getting ads right now?
I would have pre-played it and seen if there's an ad. And then,
okay.
Because you don't always get ads. I think it depends on the media. Okay, so we're going to play the scene where Seamus Finnegan, I think, is the one that says this line. But it's just so funny.
In this room, you shall discover if you possess the sight.
Professor Trelawney. At her best.
And Professor Trelawney... Together we shall cast ourselves into the future.
She didn't see that table, did she?
Sorry.
Which is the art of reading tea leaves. So please take the cup of the person sitting opposite you. What do you see? The truth lies buried like a sentence deep within a book waiting to be read. But first, you must broaden your minds. First, you must look beyond.
Rubbish.
Where did you come from?
Detective Ron.
Here all this time.
You boy, is your grandmother quite well?
I think so.
I wouldn't be so sure of that. Give me the cup. Pity. Broaden your minds.
Look at Hermione. She's like...
Oh, Your aura is pulsing, dear. Are you in the beyond? I think you are.
Sure.
Look at the cup. What do you see?
Oh, yeah. Well, Harry's got sort of a wonky cross. That's trials and suffering. Mm. And that there could be the sun, and that's happiness. So, you're going to suffer, but you're going to be happy about it.
Am I doing?
Oh, my dear boy. My dear. You have the grim.
The grin. What's the grin?
I hate that it cut there because I actually wanted to just keep going.
The grim.
Because then the what next is line the is the grim, you idiot. Oh, look. They've got Harry and Newt. You know, the leaders of the Harry Potter wizarding world. Anyway, but yeah, that's just
I
my last...
I completely missed that. I didn't hear that.
The grin. What's the grin? Oh, my God. But then I also thought, imagine all the kids that just sleep whilst all this craziness is happening. Like, Harry's going on all these adventures, and you're just at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry, and you wake up, you're like, did you hear? Sirius Black got, like, thrown out of... broken out of like the tower, blah blah. They're like, Sirius Black was it? But you're just sleeping, you're just a normal, regular kid.
Yes,
just
were you literally the one talking to me about like what life would be like for the normal, regular kid? And then there's just Harry and his group causing trouble, and they just can't want to come to school, literally learn.
Now I remember, yes, I did say this. Sorry, guys, if I've said this before, jeez, I just always find it funny. But then, my last, I guess, odds and ends or surprise, what are your thoughts on the freeze frame at the end of the film? Like when Harry's flying away on the firebolt this time, firebolt.
Yes.
And then he says, ah, and then he just freeze frames and then the movie ends.
what did you
because
think?
Because some people thought they don't like it. And then I was just thinking, but it's a movie ending. Who cares?
I didn't mind it. My only nitpick there was that the fact that we didn't get the fireball in the middle, it was one of the things that caused tension between the
group. That is the annoying part. Which I don't even know why I didn't point that out. That's true. They totally cut out.
It caused tension in the group. True. Yes.
Yeah, that is like this is a surprise because they didn't want to cause. See, this is what begins the Hermione being sort of characterized as more perfect than she is because she's actually a very annoying at times character. Yes. She is supposed to be. She's a human being.
Yes.
Just like Harry is sometimes annoying. Mm. Just like Ron is sometimes annoying. But then Hermione now becomes this persona that's like perfect and...
Yes.
Yeah, it's very, very annoying. So anyway, I guess
she becomes annoy-it-all in a way that is not adorable.
Definitely. Yeah. So I don't know if you had more surprise because then we can just blend into the character assassinations essentially with what we started.
As I said, I prefer book Hermione's exit and quitting off the divination class. Did you end up finding what I meant?
I didn't yet, but
it's been a while. It might not seem like it, but it's been a while since we actually watched the film.
Why did you have to disclose that detail?
Because it's not always me. Last time it was you, and then it's still you.
We were having a great conversation, and you just had to start the antagonism.
That's true.
I did fail us in that sense, so that we forgot the stuff.
Yeah. And also the fact that either Crabbe or Goyle disappears in the middle of filming. I was going to check who it was and why that was. I think I heard a story about that.
But that was until later, though. Because
they don't appear again, either Crabbe or Goyle, they don't appear again after the first lesson with Lupin. So from the Hawkins trip to the class with Hagrid.
They're there.
One of them is no longer there.
Yes.
Another guy has replaced them.
That was very, very weird. I don't know why.
I think there was a story. Someone was involved in an incident.
But that was later.
Someone did drugs or stole something.
The guy that did drugs or stole things, that was by the seventh hype movie. So I don't know. I even picked that up. I was like, wait, who is that random guy? Like, what is going on? Because in the book, I'm actually going to bring this up later. There's some sub-characters that are there, right? For example.
I'll check for it. I want to see if I can find it. Yeah.
Because there's some... Theo Knott is one of the characters that is brought up a lot in fan fiction.
Is that Theo?
I don't know if that's that guy. Because I was like, but then he looks not what I would expect Theo Knott to look. But then that's because I've been reading fan fiction where people make people attractive. So that's different. But so did you have any more surprises though? Like,
yes.
But you can keep searching, by the way, and I can then talk while.
Why wasn't Ron knocked out in the hospital like he was in the book?
People have an issue with that. In terms of Michael Gambon's acting as well. Because you know when Ron is on the bed and then Michael Dumbledore goes and like touches his leg whilst he's talking?
Yes, yeah.
People, I should say not people, the Real Weird Sisters had an issue with this because they were like, that makes Dumbledore look so dumb. Like, why would he be going to like someone who's already injured and is like so oblivious to their state of mind when Dumbledore is like the most observant person in the world, blah, blah, blah. And I just thought, well, for me, I've always found that scene funny. Like, to see Ron just whimpering away. But I think that's because at that time I was not as... I think at that time I was mostly focusing on watching the films. So then by the time I got around to reading the books and realizing Dumbledore's character, I kind of can understand where they're coming from. But it's not such a big gripe for me. I don't mind it. It doesn't take away from Dumbledore.
It doesn't take away, yeah.
So did you find...
So I found it's actually Goyle who disappears. Mm-hmm. So it says he disappears due to an injury.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. On set and stuff.
I'm trying to see if it was on set.
But he then disappears permanently later. Doesn't he? Like,
so he's displaced with a character that they call Pike.
Oh,
I don't remember. Do you remember him from the
I
book?
Don't know. Yeah? I don't know a character that's called Pike in the books. Because Theonaut comes up a lot, and I'm always wondering, when is he going to pop up? Because I haven't seen him yet in the first three books. So he must pop up in, like, book 4, 5, and then we go on there, so.
So it says, Goyle actor Josh Hedman injured his arm and as a result was forced to drop out of filming for action sequences. As a result, the character of Goyle was replaced by a Slytherin student referred to as Pike, played by a minor Game of Thrones actor.
Oh, yes! He's not a minor Game of Thrones actor. He's the guy that gets killed in the first freaking episode. I think, now that that face really... What's the name of the actor?
Bronson Webb.
Webb, double B?
Yeah, double B.
Because he comes up in Game of Thrones when Ned Stark, if I'm not mistaken, or is that not him? Yeah, winter is coming. He's the guy that gets killed.
Ah.
But he actually pops up a lot, actually, throughout the season. Interesting. Anyway, I don't know. We've just paused for 2 seconds.
Sorry.
Sorry.
I can't have not got the word. I'm looking at what she's doing.
I just got so absorbed. I was like, oh, is that the guy? But I think he's in the first... Oh, you've not watched... You've not watched it in a while. Like, we've both not watched it in a while. But in the first episode, I think, of season one, when Ned Stark kills the deserter from the wind. I think that's the guy that plays the deserter.
Okay.
But I could be wrong, so whatever. Yeah. Anyway, who cares? He's just a minor actor.
Yes.
But do we go into character assassinations now?
Yes.
Humanizing of Snape. First of all,
I hate it too. I realize I do hate. I definitely hate it. I like him as the... He's a hateful guy in the beginning and sort of becomes like the anti-hero as the story goes on. But he's definitely not a nice person towards Harry.
Definitely not.
Yeah.
Like, they just don't make him as menacing as he's supposed to be.
Yeah, that's the word.
Yeah.
Harry and Ron hate him as much as they fear him.
Because you can never feel the menace out of Alan Rickman. And that's unfortunately a byproduct of Alan Rickman being who he is. Rest in peace. But
no, I think he could have gone that way.
Because Die Hard, all these movies where he was a villain.
Could it be the direction, the decision of the directors on their part on how to portray Snape? Because I feel like he was very capable of being able to play that role of maybe some, not villain, but kind of villainy, but also kind of, because when they do that occlumency class,
yes,
you are scared for Harry. Like, this man is going to be able to get into his mind.
Literally, literally. Yes. And when Harry counters that, he literally, Snape is so angry at Harry. When we get to book five.
Yes, whew, yes.
He is so mad. He's yeah. Like, the way he protects those kids in that scene when Lupin turns. Not that he's not got a right to protect the kids. He's a teacher.
I think he does protect them in the book, doesn't he?
I don't really remember, but to be honest, I just feel like those little moments sometimes are not even necessary. They could have just had Snape be knocked out the whole time and not even humanize him. That's what I mean. Like, actually, let's just
Was he not knocked out?
I think he was knocked out in the book.
He does take his responsibility as a teacher.
That's the thing. Seriously. I was going to say, maybe he was.
He would protect them just off that basis.
But you see what makes no sense for me? Mm. He protects them in the movie. But because the movie then doesn't portray the fact that Snape was literally trying to get Cornelius Fudge to get Sirius killed. Like, yes. Snape had a vendetta against Snape. I mean, against Sirius. He wanted Sirius dead. If he could, he wanted to. So that's what I don't like about some of those extra scenes that they don't put in. Because they make Snape not look like as much of a threat. Because he was a threat. Yeah. He was a threat to Sirius' life. Mm. He was always a threat to the kids in general, which he didn't like. Yes. He loved Draco Malfoy. So.
How many times did he try to get Harry expelled? Harry and Ron is a
literally. So yeah, I feel like he was just a byproduct of like that like maybe you're right, the direction, because Alan Rickman could have definitely leaned into.
Yeah, he definitely had the capability.
He was a great actor. So yeah, but anyway, any of your other character assassinations?
Yeah, in the character assassination bit, I also was taking into account appreciating the fact that they actually let a character do what they actually did in the book. So it's kind of manifold. Yeah. So I'm happy that Ron was the one to inform them that no one had ever broken out of Azkaban, because that is something growing up in the wizarding world.
Amen.
That he would naturally, he would know organically. Amen. Like, not that they could have easily put Hermione saying that ish and I would have, like, I'm surprised they actually didn't.
Like the mud bloodline in the second one.
Yes, yeah. In the film, Hermione, this film was actually, I know you said it was also unkind to Ron, but I also felt like it was to Harry as well.
Mm-hmm.
It dumped him down a little bit. In the film, Hermione deduces that Dumbledore wants them to save Buckbeak from his cryptic line.
Yes.
But it's actually Harry who figures it out. And then when they're trying to get Buckbeak away from after the execution squad sees him and eyeball him, which Harry did try to go and get him before, but like in the book, Hermione stopped and like, you know, they need to see him and whatnot, which is what happened in the book.
Yep.
And then I don't know why they diverted from following the book. So Harry has gone to get Buckbeak because he's already had the relationship.
Yeah.
Buckbeak knows him. He bows and all that. And he's trying to get Buckbeak. Buckbeak is resisting. Yeah. Buckbeak was resisting. Then Hermione comes up and grabs the weasels and whatnot. Harry was able to do that in the film without the weasels. He was able to get
Buckbeak. In the book, you mean? You said Harry was able. Yeah, just to clarify. Yeah, sorry.
In the book, Harry was able to get Buckbeak into the tree line before the execution team came up without Hermione's help.
Yep.
Yes.
Exactly.
So I don't understand why they... Harry is the main character. They probably can dump down the people around
him.
But they can't dumb it down. Like, you know, whatever attributes he has in the book.
Exactly. It's not to take away from it. Hermione is a great...
I love Hermione.
Like, when I read Hermione fan fiction, whether it's shipping her with Draco or just in general, she's a character who's very pragmatic, very logical, super smart, super intelligent, knows herself.
Yes.
That she doesn't really need to take away from other people's shine in the film.
She shines on her own. Literally.
She has many, like the fact that the Time Turner story is literally almost about her because she's been using the time. So she knows how time works. So she has authority on that matter.
Absolutely.
Within the Time Turner space, very much should be the shining star.
Mm.
But then let Harry be that impulsive, you know, thinker that we know him to be.
Yes. He's intuitive. He's got an intuitive understanding of magic, not in the way that Hermione understands it.
Yes.
Hermione is very by the book. For example, when they went through the trapdoor.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's why Harry can cast a Patronus, because he's able to just draw from that. Like, you're saying, some people have an aptitude for certain things. I think Hermione, the lowest class, if the books make more of a point of this, I think, when we read on and on. Harry, I think, usually actually beats Hermione in DADA because it's a more practical subject. Yes. So he can tune, you know, into all that stuff. But Hermione is not so good at that stuff because she thinks about it too much. And that's not to take away from her character. That's who she is. And I love that. Yeah, that's what I am too.
Yeah.
I relate to Hermione's character more than I relate to a Harry, because I'm not a Harry. But you're right. The movie's just, get it, feminism, great. But that's not the book. No. The book is about Harry. Mm. Give Harry his due, please.
Yes.
Oh, God.
I think the films took on this. We live in a very PC world now. Yeah. And I'm not saying that there's no room for things being
like equal portrayal.
Yes. Definitely there's room for that. But you're taking away from what the book was trying to portray.
Yes.
Yeah. Because why is that thing back on your eyelash? Like,
oh, sorry.
Oh, God.
Is it gone now?
Yes.
I was like, is it just magically appearing on your eyes? This girl's been looking at my eyes too much. Jesus Christ. I don't even know. Maybe I hadn't taken it out off enough and you didn't notice.
Yeah. But, what was I saying?
They don't have to take away from.
Yes. As I said, come PC, and there is room for equality in film and whatnot. But this book, this film is based off books. Yes.
Just
you can take liberties, as Alfonso did.
Exactly.
And some liberties were very good. Like, they added to the film and whatnot, and to the book as well. Like, they complemented the book quite well. But there are some things that, because it's a series, you're seeing these characters grow. And then you're taking away, in the film version, you're taking away from what they did in the books.
Literally.
And it changes the story.
Literally, Ron becomes a non-character by the end of this movie.
Changes the story.
Becomes a non-character, which is so sad. So I was going to say, because we've got a bit more time now with our part two, but what you're saying about how you can add more without taking away is exactly for me why I love The Lord of the Rings. Because in The Lord of the Rings, the female characters are not a big part of the books, actually. Like, haven't read the series, unfortunately, so those that are listening out there that have more authority on this, sorry if I misspeak, but Arwen's character, like the character that's with Aragorn, she's actually not featured that much in the books, apparently.
Oh, okay.
Not very much so. Okay. But she ends up being an integral part to the films.
Yes.
In a very good way. That doesn't take away from Aragorn. Aragorn is still the hero. Love Viggo Mortensen portraying Aragorn. He's still the alpha male.
We're sidetracking here. So does Arwen actually help Aragorn to save the hobbits?
Yes, because
in the books,
books. I don't know because I've not read the books, but I know that it's not, if I'm not mistaken, it doesn't necessarily take away from how Aragorn is helping.
No, it doesn't.
Because that scene, he needs her so that she can get to the elven land.
Yes.
I think she is the only one that can cross and
whatnot. Yes.
So in that sense, he's already done his bit. Yes. To an extent, and then she takes over, and they share the duty, and you know, and it's I just love the Lord of the Rings movies, but I don't know, I can't speak on how much of the book that particular scene would have been. But either way, my point was that it doesn't take away from
the
main character; he still gets his due, still gets his moment, all of that.
Yeah,
but bloody hell, the writers of Harry Potter are acting as if, you know, they can't just add maybe an extra little moment for Hermione. That doesn't have to take away from Ron. Mm. For example, in the Shrieking Shack, half the lines that Hermione says are from Ron.
Oh, really?
Literally, like, the protract, like, you have to get through us to get to Harry. That's Ron's line.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and he says it whilst he's freaking got a broken leg.
Yes.
Don't understand. And just making Ron more of a comedic relief for no apparent reason. Making him mean to Hermione for no apparent reason. Like, those things just don't make sense to me. I just get frustrated.
Well, it doesn't make sense sometimes when he's mean to her, because they have not allowed for the issues that actually were between them in the books to be portrayed in the film. Therefore, it does sometimes feels empty.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because even like you were saying with Harry, he's the one that figures out why Dumbledore wanted them to go back to that particular moment. But in that moment, Hermione is the one that figures that out.
Yeah.
Hermione is the one that... Hermione... movie Hermione frustrates me so much.
Because
I love Emma Watson. I love Hermione. Book Hermione. But movie Hermione just so many frustrations just because they just don't. They just don't do her justice. They should do her more. Because then they make her seem as if, like, she has to be this ultra alpha female. Like,
yes.
She doesn't have to be perfect. Yeah. You actually wanted to be flawed and...
Yes, yeah.
Because we're flawed.
That's how you relate to a character. Literally. Because, no one is perfect.
Yeah, do you have any more character
assassinations? I think that's it, yeah. Yeah. So I wonder how big that section is going to get.
As we go on.
Yes.
That will get so big. Is it weird? Because so far we've been inverting a lot. Mm. So many likes, not so many dislikes. Yes. But I feel like as we move forward, you never know. Because I do know that I don't completely utterly hate the movies. It's just that I hate aspects of them, which I probably will draw on a lot more. But now let's just comment, I guess, a bit more on casting before we wrap up.
And performances.
Yeah, casting and performances.
I enjoyed Hermione's... we're getting from
her. Exactly, right?
Talking about Hermione. But I loved her portrayal of Hermione.
Yeah,
I loved Emma Watson's portrayal of Hermione.
Harry savoring Harry.
The line that she has in the on the train... it's on the suitcase, Ronald. It says the whole name. His whole government name.
Their whole married couple dynamic is really starting at an
early age. Yeah, that's what you... Thank you. Now you lead me into my shipping thing.
Oh, okay, cool.
How
cool.
They've started to add to the Ron and Hermione dynamic.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
So actually, the title is Shipping in Bold.
Mm-hmm.
So from Ron and Hermione holding... hands during the Buckbeak and Harry scene.
Yeah.
Their Hogsmeade outing. So when they get closer to, when they get to the Shrieking Shrek.
Yeah.
I just put quotes. I can't remember who said what, but in quotes, someone says, do you want to move a bit closer?
That was Hermione.
And then, so Ron says, huh? Hermione quickly rushes to say to the Shrieking Shack, like, it was cute or whatever.
He was interpreting it like the other way too. Okay.
Hermione crying after Buckbeak is beheaded and her turning to Ron because
she couldn't turn to Harry.
Yeah,
but she turned to Ron.
And then they were really heavy handed with planting the seeds for their relationship. Yeah. And I think you mentioned something else. Oh yeah, when Ron is. When they get out of the tunnel from the Shrieking Shack,
and Ron is playing up.
Like, he's men. What do they call it? When men are sick, and then it feels like
men flu.
Yes.
That's his version. He dropped his own dose of men flu. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that was very. Yeah. They definitely did. So casting wise, you thought Emma Watson was pretty much perfect in portraying.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty lucky as well. Sorry to comment before I comment on my castings. I thought it was really lucky how the production team is in having like the same or mostly the same cast, save for like Richard Harris at this point in the film series who had died, but they literally were able to have the same actors come back and portray these roles, which just makes it so much easier. If you go like, because if you think about like how some actors then are recast because whatever, it's very difficult to keep like a 7 film franchise. Like at that time, I think Harry Potter, besides the Bond films,
8 films.
Yeah. Besides the Bond films, had like a very like long series of films, and also Bond is different because it had many actors in between and different actors doing things. But at that time, I think. This was pre-Marvel and its, big, universe. But that's a pretty, hard thing to keep up because all these actors would have then had to tee up their own schedules and do other things. Like, when Daniel Radcliffe, I think, did December Boys and stuff, he would have had to do that maybe for, 2 months of, his 8-month shooting schedule, all this. So I'm just thinking, casting, they've been very lucky. They were very lucky, to have had these actors come on board and do. And as much as we might criticize the direction and stuff, I still love the actors that do this stuff because it's pretty good. But I thought Dan really stepped up. Like
he did.
He really did. The scene when he gets upstairs and he's mad at his aunt blowing up and things going wrong and he kicks the door. And then he sort of looks at his parents' picture, I think, on his bedside table. And you can just sort of see him, the emotion playing on his face, I suppose, or the frustration.
He's grown as a situation. Actor.
The situation he's in. And just having to deal with Aunt Marge, the possibility of being expelled, just not having his parents there. He wants to be, he's had to mother himself and father himself, which is a very, very sad situation to think about. Like, terrible.
You're making me think of that those YouTubers again with their channel. This child had to mother and father himself. Honestly.
Literally.
He grew up under the stairs. How is he entitled?
Literally. It was very, oh, that take, the take, gosh, the take. They made a big mistake.
That was a very bad take.
Big mistake. Misstep, sorry. And then Gary Oldman as well, perfect casting.
I was going to say, also, what's the actor's name who plays Remus?
Oh, David Thewlis. Yes.
Yes. David Thewlis. I can't picture anyone else as Remus or Sirius.
But yeah. Isn't it weird that they cast quite older actors when Lily and James were supposed to be like very young? So by this time, they would have been in their early 30s. But both, I think David Thewlis, probably David Thewlis was a bit younger than Gary Oldman, but they would have been like in their late 40s to mid 50s. Like just saying that.
They should have been in.
Because Harry's parents were killed when they were 21. Roughly.
So Harry is now 13. So they'll be in their late 30s. Yeah.
No, mid-30s.
Mid-30s, yeah.
Just saying, like, I'm just saying it's funny.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
But obviously it's not so much about that. It's more the actor coming in and doing their
being
best.
Able
so
to they were give, both. Be, like, what? Being able to oh my God. To portray the character.
Oh my God. What is going on with your brain? Oh my God, what is going on with your brain? It's okay. I'll
give
save
justice
you.
To the character.
No, that's true. Yes.
It was something like that. That's what I'm trying to say.
Oh, I guess do justice to the character's blah blah and on the screen. Yeah,
yes,
I get that. Yes. I get that. But I, because especially I loved Gary Oldman in terms of how he just goes from being deranged to literally just loving Harry in like 2 seconds.
Yes.
Like literally 30 seconds before they're outside of that tunnel, he was just going, to Peter Pettigrew. And then they come and it's like, I don't know if you want to move in with me. Like, have you ever considered that? I'm like,
when he was yelling, I'm thinking now someone should have
you don't
want
to be on the wrong side of
some
him.
Milk.
You don't want to be on the wrong side of Sirius Black, because when he loves hard.
Yes.
And when he hates, hates wholeheartedly, which is very, very funny.
You were talking about how the nostalgia, him reminiscing, him savoring Harry's character and all that, because of his similarities to James.
Yeah.
There are people who think that sometimes he actually didn't see Harry. Mm. He saw James. That's what he says when they're in the Mystery of Magic. Yeah.
Nice one, James.
Yeah.
Although I don't know if that's just a movie portrayal or also a book portrayal.
I actually don't mind whether it's a book.
Yeah, exactly. It's very good.
It's very true. You see how they always say, you look so much like your father. You look so much like your father. Almost like they see his father and they don't see him.
They don't. Yeah. They definitely don't. Which is, oh my God, I always have always shipped James and Lily hard. I know they're canon, so you don't really even ship anything.
Yes.
But I just love that portrayal. Like the height, like just thinking of them having an attack. Yeah, friends to lovers. Enemies to lovers is one of my favorite tropes out there. So.
Have you ever read James and Lily fan fiction?
Oh, definitely. I have read a lot of James and Lily fan fiction. Like, one of my favorite ones, cannot remember the title to save my life, but it was about them being in 60, they're about to be made head girl and head boy, because they are made head girl and head boy in canon. But the dynamic they share, because at that time Lily hates James.
Yep.
But then she obviously starts seeing him differently because he's matured and he's a head boy, and they're obviously forced into situations together. It's funny. Fan fiction writers always write this extra bit of like boarding school where kids are allowed to be alone. Like, no, they're probably not ever allowed to be alone like that. I'm sure you can testify to this. You went to a boarding school, but they just like are allowed to have time together and stuff. But yeah, I've read quite a bit of James and fan fiction.
Okay. Yeah.
Was quite besides Harry and Ginny at the time, they were my second like favorite, and then obviously Hermione is now like trumping everybody else. But anyway, get into that later. I also liked Michael Gambon. You already loved him. Mm-hmm. Emma Thompson and Dawn French, who was playing the portrait lady. What's her name?
The fat lady.
Yeah. So yeah, those are my casting. They were pretty good castings all around. That's it for you. I love you. Your energy is now deflating.
I've got just like a last question. I just got how powerful is Harry? Like,
yes,
I was thinking in terms of his this question. I had it in the book notes version, and then I forgot it. But how powerful is Harry? Like conjuring up a corporal Patronus.
Yes, exactly.
Rema says even matured wizards, some of
are
them
not able to are do not that. Able exactly. To do
it. So exactly. I'm thinking he gets the parcel tongue from Voldemort, mm-hmm. and is that boosting his power, or is the Patronus outside of the Horcrux? Because the Horcrux is like a
Voldemort.
Voldemort's Horcrux. Doing that, separating yours is dark. So yes. it definitely darkens the spirit. Mm-hmm. So, and the Patronus is from positive memories and whatnot. So definitely it's not the
definitely
of Voldemort. So helping him add power to his that. So is Harry just an ordinary wizard, or is it definitely powerful in his own right?
I can't speak to.
Maybe it's too early for us to kind of.
Yeah, I feel like we'll obviously rank. Funny enough, in this rank, he's ranked 14 as like a powerful wizard.
10?
Yeah. Just this random screen rant ranking of powerful wizards. Let's see what the top one. Yeah, so it's Newt's commander is. Oh, I think this goes more to like. Yeah, the 20 most powerful wizards that they rank in this particular poll. And obviously, I think they rank like Voldemort. I mean, Dumbledore is number one. Yeah, Dumbledore is number one. Makes sense. But I was going to say, I think for me personally, because I know that there are people that sort of in this world would be like, Harry's only special because he's the boy who lived. Mm-hmm. Valid, fair, valid point, you know. If you were to think of Neville Longbottom in that sense, because Neville is not inherently a powerful wizard for me. I feel like he doubts himself too much, so therefore that impacts on how his magic might manifest itself.
Yes.
Whereas Harry, because of his upbringing, even though he was just an ordinary little boy, when he was born, I don't think he would have had anything special. He would not have been anything special if not for what happened with Voldemort. But
yes,
because of his upbringing that then built his character, I think then that is what made him a powerful wizard. Personally, I feel like he is a powerful wizard because of his circumstances.
Yes.
But I don't think he was just like, I don't think any of them are just born to be. But like how, let's say, Dumbledore went around messing around with dark magic. The power that comes from Dumbledore is the fact that he knows he can go all the way, but he holds himself back.
Yes.
Whereas on the opposite side of the spectrum, Voldemort knows he can go all the way and he goes all the way. So that's what gives him his power. Yes. Whereas for Harry, he actually doesn't even believe he's so powerful, but he still manifests that power because he's someone that loves a lot and cares a lot and kind of thinks selflessly. So therefore, he's able to manifest this power. Because you know how there's that saying about like some people are born great.
I hate you. That's what I'm typing.
Oh my God. What? Okay, guys, this is so weird. Okay, this is not. What are we going to call this episode besides great coincidences or something? Or I don't know. This is literally.
Some are born great. Yes. Some achieve greatness. And some have greatness thrust upon them.
Yes. Yes. Oh my God, we're mind. Oh, how are we thinking the same? Because as I was thinking, I was like, oh, wait. There's something about great people, blah, blah, blah. And then you're searching. Oh, I love this. I love this. I love this. That's why I do this podcast with you. It's amazing. It's great energy. But you get what I mean, right? Yes. I think that's what that's why Dumbledore, Voldemort, and Harry, even Snape can come into that. Because Snape is still a powerful wizard. Hey, to do occlumency and not have the Dark Lord know you're spying on him for that long.
Yes.
That's a great. Yes. That's powerful. Man. Yes. That's powerful. But so I guess I would say he's powerful because of his circumstances. I don't think he could probably go toe-to-toe with Voldemort on like a normal regular level wizard.
Yes.
I mean, normal wizard level. Mm. That's why probably his dad was defeated. Because I'm sure James would have been a talented wizard.
Mm.
But perhaps his power was not obviously enough for the Dark Lord and stuff. But I think because of his circumstances, he became powerful. Like, what are your, I guess, thoughts on
I feel like I'll need to give it time and read more of the books, but I feel like to some level he is powerful. I wish there were books after the piece of Voldemort's soul was removed, so that maybe they could have gone back to school so that we could understand what exactly was being helped by the soul and what and boosted by that soul.
That's true.
Yeah. And what exactly was Harry? That's yeah, true. Yeah. Yeah. That's yeah. Yeah. True. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I do feel he if a spell like that gives other wizards trouble, he's also he also can do occlumency and. Yes.
But he's not very good at occlumency. He's not very though. Good at it. He's terrible at occlumency. Yeah,
yeah. But what of that was the Voldemort soul that was affecting
true.
That?
That's true. Yes. That's true. Yes. But I think I love, there's a line in one fan fiction that I read that Draco is saying to Hermione, people that care a lot can and do not make good occlumens or whatever. Cause that's yes. The, yeah. Ah. So in the sense that he was trying to say like, not that, there's a what?
It's a Dementor. Can't you see it?
Oh, I can see, but like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, Dementors are very, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, that very is creepy art. Yeah,
sorry, we're just diverting. No, anyway, that was just the line. I was just going to say, like, it was an interesting point that I was like, oh, this author, they've picked onto something that like, because certain people might like, obviously latch onto certain memories a lot or, really deeply feel sentimental to certain memories, they wouldn't be able to occlude those memories well enough for someone who's a legitimate that one, for someone who can penetrate your mind to be able to not get to, because you obviously always manifest those feelings, you always manifest the fear and the whatever. And one thing I like, because I'm reading more fan fiction and you can tell fans pick up on certain things. One thing they pick up on, since we're talking about like occlumens and stuff, is that within, when you're actually in someone's mind, even though maybe you might be able to filter your memory,
yeah,
for example, which is like what Slughorn did with the Horcrux memory, some people play on the fact that you can actually feel that person's feelings within that like vision or memory that you're getting. So if you're, you know, loving someone in that scene, you're trying to show that you don't care about that person, your feelings might actually betray you, even if in that scene you're trying to show that you don't care that person is whatever, if that makes sense. So for example, in one of the fan fictions, Draco has to do something to Hermione that hurts her so that she can be able to manifest that feeling of hurt in the particular memory that Voldemort is trying to penetrate and whatever. But we'll get into it. Let's not digress. Let's wrap up this segment. Yeah. So essentially, final verdicts. What are your final verdicts, rating-wise, the movie as a standalone and the movie as an adaptation? And just final thoughts on it.
Rating the movie as a standalone, 7 to 8 out of 10.
Mm, okay.
I'll say 8 out of 10, yeah. Mm-hmm. As an adaptation, okay, as a standalone, 8 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
As an adaptation, 7 out of 10.
Mm-hmm. We really should tally these up, by the way. We need to go back and listen to our tally so that we can actually have like an overall tally.
Okay, I'll actually write it down and save it. Okay, cool.
Because mine, standalone, 10 out of 10. Sorry, I just love The Prisoner of Azkaban. I really, really do. Like, as a film, just an enjoyable film to watch. Adaptation, I'm having to revise it. I had 9, but I'm going to put an 8, sorry. Not a 10. An 8, because like what we were saying, some of the stuff that was bit annoying.
Sometimes you rate it weirdly. I remember you were praising this with the film, and all of a sudden they've got a low mark, and I'm like, hey, make it make sense, bruh.
It's so, because the thing is, for me, you're right, the adaptation, it can't deserve such a like almost A plus rating, because they definitely were things that think about it. Talked about them, you know, it's really annoying. But like I said, it'll take a miracle for 4 to 7. I should vote this. It'll take a miracle for film 4 to 7 to change my opinion on The Prisoner of Azkaban in terms of being the best in the series. Like I said before, I need to be totally surprised, because I haven't watched 4 to 7 in a while. So I'll see. And then
that's why we want us to watch them together, especially.
Yeah, definitely. Time we just need to commit. We just can't talk too much. That's the problem.
Do you know what took us out?
Mm-hmm.
The scene with Annie or Terry Booth in the Great Hall. After that, we just lost completely the plot. We could not continue. We cackled.
That was too good. And now, I guess to wrap up quickly, 5 to 10 minutes or so, recommendation, because we're pretty good on time this time around.
Our recommendations. I'm currently reading Pride and Prejudice fan fiction. Honestly, go to any Pride and I've not come across a bad, like, awful Pride and Prejudice. So just go. We've got multiple sites, fanfiction.net, archive. They've got specific Jane Austen, not Pride and Prejudice, just Austen sites. We've got the Jane Austen fanfiction fandom or index or something. The Meriton Ladies. A lot. Enjoy.
So you just particularly read Pride and Prejudice fanfiction, not like Jane Austen as a whole fanfiction.
I have read like the Mansfield Park. Okay, I've also read...
Because I'm still to divert from Pride and Prejudice.
I've also read Persuasion.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm going to try to do Persuasion because I love Persuasion.
I think I have read some Persuasion fan fiction, but I'm really into the Pride and Prejudice one. Mean, yeah.
Who isn't?
The way, like, the Jeff Index one, the Jane Austen fan fiction index site is massive. Their archive is massive.
Wow, I've heard about that.
The way you
that.
Can search it, you can even go by, there's a quick search. So you can click what storyline you want. Mm. So if you want, like, let's say proposal was not made at Hansford, you click that, you search that, there's a lot of stories that come under that.
Wow.
Meeting, the meeting did not happen first at Netherfield, at the Meriton Assembly. Click that, lots of stories that come out.
Okay.
It's just, wow.
Okay, like, that's amazing.
Each tag has a lot of stories.
And
underneath.
Are these just stories posted on any fandom site?
So it's an archive. So it will collect stories from any other...
Okay.
Yeah, so it can give you links. It will give you links either to fanfiction.net.
Or AO3.
Archive.
Okay. Yeah.
There's another one. They're called DWG. It's called Dwiggy or something
like
that.
Yes, I know that one. Yeah.
It's like...
Yep. Okay. I will be definitely checking it out once I get out of my Dramini face, because that's my recommendation. So actually, before I go there, I did recommend, obviously, Nerdwriter's video on Ezra Ruskin. I highly recommend. Yeah. And then Movie Flame as well. Nerdwriter is a bit more better in terms of the technical side, but Movie Flame just generally points out certain things and, you know, you enjoy them just as much.
I probably won't even watch this now because it will affect what I'm
exactly
gonna say. I know
exactly.
you can separate it.
I can definitely separate,
but I feel like I'll end up like sort of like incorporating and forgetting what I want to say.
Okay. And then obviously Dominic Noble, you know, he does the Lost in Adaptation series.
Oh yes,
Lost
yes,
in Translation.
Yes,
or
yes,
Lost
yes.
in Adaptation. So Lost in Adaptation.
Dominic Noble.
His channel
I know
name.
Him, yes, yeah.
But yes, he's obviously he does Prisoner of Azkaban as part
another
of his
person
series.
Who did it was Dylan is in Trouble.
Oh, okay.
So
okay.
He's now done another series of Harry Potter. Yeah. I haven't watched that one since we started this, but I watched.
I think it popped up on my feed, but I didn't watch it as well.
I didn't watch it because I didn't want to. Yes, but he's done two episodes now of Harry Potter. The first one is the oldest one is the longest, and this one I don't think is as long. I don't know what he's talking about then, but he kind of revisits.
Harry Potter. Which is what got him into famous. It's so interesting, isn't it?
Like, is that what made him famous?
Yeah, like I remember coming across his channel because he was like, I'm watching Harry Potter for the first time.
Okay.
People were like drawn to the fact that someone is watching it for the first time. And I think he was one of the few people that started this whole trend of like watching something for the first time.
Okay.
Not the first, but one of the
Are
first.
You the one? You're the one who introduced him to me?
Probably.
Yeah.
Because I was on YouTube a lot back then.
Yes,
now I'm not so much. I'm trying not to be as addicted. And then also the post that I gave to you about the alternative titles to like Harry Potter. Like the one about like if the kids were to be in Harry Potter. Oh, actually, this is a different one. Because the one that I recommended to you initially.
What did you send that to me? Was that on you on Facebook, on WhatsApp?
On WhatsApp, I think so. Yeah. Yes. Let me go to the link and I will, let me just quickly read out some of the titles, the funnier titles that I've written on there. So there's one that says, Hogwarts is told by other students in Harry Potter.
Oh, yes, I remember this.
Yes. The year Harry Potter and his dumb friends broke all the rules, blah, 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 blah. And
no, don't go. Read them. Yeah.
The year Harry Potter and his dumb friends broke all the rules and Dumbledore gave them a bunch of house points for it. The year Harry Potter mysteriously started talking to snakes and then suddenly a giant effing snake started trying to kill all the Muggle-borns. The year a murderer broke into the castle to kill Harry Potter and we had to sleep on the floor while soul-sucking monsters floated around. The year Harry Potter showed up holding the corpse of a fellow student and they gave him a bunch of money. The year Dumbledore vouched for Harry Potter's stupid illegal club and we got stuck with Umbridge during the most important test of our short lives. I feel like Hermione would write that.
Yes.
The year Harry Potter was found with another freaking dead body and all of a sudden we woke up and had to fight in our pajamas. The year Harry Potter wasn't even here and we still had to have another middle of the night battle against the Dark Lord who of course came to kill Harry Potter. And I think there are many other variations done by other people.
That is funny.
So that's another. And then finally, my last recommendations are Dramini fan fictions. Sorry to drag on. I've been dropping hints through this, but at some point...
You were warned.
I'm so sorry. At some point, right, what happened was I was on this Bollywood binge, I think, before I told you. And I must have been reading... I was on YouTube and then I saw someone post about how Draco needs to have, I saw something on YouTube about how Draco needs a redemption arc. Mm-hmm. And then somehow that led me, I didn't end up watching that video because obviously when we're doing this, even though I can separate some things, I try not to obviously go into the most immediate thing that we're going to like look at. And then somehow I found myself just going on the Harry Potter fan fiction tag and typing in Draco and Hermione, and which for some reason is actually a really high number of stories on archive anyway, archive of our own. So went on it and then I found some really, really great. So one of them I was telling you about. So there's the top one, I think one of the top rated ones is by an author called Loves Bitsica 8 or something. Loves Bitsicate. I don't know. It's called The Right Thing to Do. Cannot highly recommend that. Like, it is the best. Like, you know when you just read a story and you just forget that there was another story that bore this story, essentially? That is, I'll send you the list. Don't even worry about typing it. So I recommend The Right Thing to Do. Same author, Loves Beat Kate. I'm calling a name. Also, there's another one called The Auction. And The Auction was actually born out of a scene in The Right Thing to Do where they reference an auction having happened and that made her write another whole story. And both of these stories are pretty much portraying Draco being redeemed in some form or shape, which is the obsession that I found I've got where I want Draco to be redeemed. So it's very, very weird. Mm-hmm. And then there's another one called Tremble and Depart. That one especially tugs at my heartstrings because it shows Draco being this character that's like on probation, like pretty much from the moment he gets released out of Azkaban. So if you think of like someone who's he's out of jail, but he's out of jail on this condition. So he has to, he's got curfew, he has to operate at a certain time back home. He lives in a ministry controlled apartment or neighborhood or whatever. Yeah. So there are all these restrictions on his life that he actually doesn't have that much freedom. Mm. And obviously everyone still sees him as this monster. And here's Hermione, who I think, because all of the three stories that I've mentioned so far have this element of Draco and Hermione started seeing each other differently way before the war, but couldn't express that before. Like, as in, they didn't even interact or anything, but that antagonism of the mudblood and, you know, you foul mouth, cockroach, whatever, somehow there was a turning point. It's usually around the Yule Bowl.
Yep.
It's a turning point as well. Makes sense. Hermione was starting to look like, you know, the babe that she is, but in Tremble and Depart they then end up going on a mission together because Draco, he's now starting to get more of his like license to work and but he's obviously still needs a supervisor, and unfortunately because everybody doesn't like Draco, Hermione ends up taking the task, and at first you wonder why is she taking the task, and then it turns out she actually is interested in Draco, and then through the journey they, it's this weird thing where they go to this house, think of Hunger Games, how they have the Hunger Games arena, and especially Catching Fire. They've got all these different scenarios, whatever. That's kind of what Tremble and Depart is about. Like, they've got all these challenges that they come across, and all through that, they're just building this relationship. And oh my God. And obviously, all of this is always explicit. Like,
hello, if you don't want to read explicit stuff, don't go. Like, I don't even bother to go on anything else but that. Like, just because the problem is, if you don't also go on that tag, sometimes people just write very generic fics. Like,
I can't do that.
I'm not reading fanfiction. And then there's a beautiful one called Dancer Adjusting His Shoulders.
How many Dremion fanfics have you read?
Just having to like pump them out so that I can get them into the world. Dancer Adjusting His Shoulder Strap. This one is so beautiful. Like, it portrays Draco after about 7 years of like being in Azkaban and then like having to come out of Azkaban and live his life and stuff. Him and Harry become partners as Aurors, so therefore they build a bit of a friendship, and then Harry brings him into the circle of like Ginny, Ron and Hermione. And obviously Hermione at first is not trusting of Draco, but then she obviously starts growing an attraction to him. And from the onset, Draco is pretty much into Hermione, but Hermione is obviously like, oh, stay away, whatever. But then through that, what I liked most about this was the way they portrayed the other characters around that. So I think I mentioned this to you. Blaise the Beanie makes a lot of appearances in these fics.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Theonot makes a lot of appearances. Pansy Parkinson. So these are all characters that in the books I don't care about. Mm-hmm. But within these fan fictions, they like really portray them very well.
I've read fan fiction where I actually do care about them.
Exactly, yeah, right? Yeah. And then in this, I also love that, what's her name? It shows Draco's redemption also coming through him apologizing to the people he wronged. One of them being Neville, because I actually forgot, he bullies Neville like crazy, like Draco does. So in one of the beautiful scenes in Dancer Adjusting His Shoulder Strap is when Hermione comes across him and Neville like talking, and it's just like the most beautiful scene. I was like, oh my God, like how do people come up with this stuff? So like that's one, and I could go on and on, but one of my more recent ones that I really enjoyed was also the disappearances of Draco Malfoy. That actually portrays them with Draco coming along the journey of finding the Horcruxes, literally the best thing. Like, I was like, oh my God. Like, it happens in the most organic way. Mm. And that's the one I was saying where Harry finds a new, what is it called? Department for the headquarters for the Order of the Phoenix.
Mm.
And he makes it his parents' cottage.
Mm.
And, like, they put, like, the priory in, no, Finita Incantatum, whatever spell, the secret keeper spell on that, and then that becomes headquarters. But then Draco is also dealing with like his pure blood hate that he had. Mm. And literally there's one scene that I wanted to cry, where like they go out into the Muggle world and he's like overwhelmed by just seeing all these Muggles that he thought were enemies, were hateful people. And then he realized just they're like people like everybody else. And I'm just like, where are these authors getting all this freaking sentimental shit? But they do. And then, but the final one, because I don't want to keep recommending shit, Ride or Die. That one, funny enough, because I watched Sons of Anarchy before,
yeah,
and I love bikers, or I love the bikey world portrayed on screen. I don't love bikers, sorry. They portray Draco as a biker and Hermione as like a doctor, like in Sons of Anarchy, actually, the dynamic. But it's done so well. And I was like,
so is it like an AU where there's no magic?
Essentially.
Oh, okay, okay.
But it's done so, but literally, Dumbledore was like the former president of this biker gang and he died. And then Tom Riddle comes in as the new president. But obviously, he's still a bit of a villain. So they're portraying that element. And they've got literally every, Dean Thomas and Seamus are like together in a relationship. Padma Patil is in there. Parvati is in there. Ron and Harry are like cops and whatnot. And it just all kind of makes sense. And I'm like, and she references the Wizarding World in the weirdest way, because she'll be like dropping things like the color green being like something that's featured as part of like the gang's like gang colors or whatever. Like the Slytherin symbol, like the Slytherin crest, the school crest is featured as like the gang's crest of their whatever. Just little organic things. I just think, where do these authors get? Anyway, so that, I don't want to keep going, but I highly am into Draymine fan fiction right now and I cannot stop. I'm sorry, you're going to have to stop me. Find a way to stop. Please do, because I've got teed up.
No, I'm just 14. Not overwhelmed. I'm just in shock at the amount of, and I don't think even the ones that you mentioned, as many as the fanfics that you've actually read. I feel like you've read more than that.
Literally. And some of them have been terrible, but I just had to skip through and be like, I can't do it. Yep, there's just so many.
Where are you reading this from?
Oh, I always do archive. Can't do fanfiction.net. The only thing that annoys me is somehow the interface. I don't like the way it looks on the phone. Mind you, it's
on the, like, are you using the app?
the fanfiction.
I tried and I didn't like it.
Oh, okay.
So you is it good?
I like the app. Yeah, I can't read on the website anymore.
Okay, I'll download the app maybe. Yeah, but I've always found Archive, and also my bookmarks have now started accumulating on the app. So
because you've got an account with Archive, don't you?
Yeah, I
don't have one. Probably I should open one. With the amount of fanfiction I read on Archive as well, yeah.
Dude, but anyway, yeah, and also, like I keep saying, all of it is explicit, all of it is, just, yeah. There's one scene where I was like, literally, where did you think about this? But I'll tell you after the pod, because I can't say it on the pod, because yes. It's too much. But anyway, I think that is it for this episode of this thing, right? Are we done?
Of this thing, yes, we're done.
Okay, cool. So that's it for this episode of The Story Never Ends, the podcast where we reread our favorite books and watch their adaptations. Thank you for joining us, and we will catch you next time.
Bye.
Bye, guys.